This is a Boeing 707 jet of Continental Airlines. This morning, it was making Continental's Flight 54 from Los Angeles to Houston. Tonight, it sits on the ground at El Paso, Texas, its tires and landing gear, and one of its engines disabled by bullets fired by the police to prevent two armed men hijacking it and having it flown to Havana. The two men are in jail at El Paso, charged with kidnapping an airplane and transporting it across state borders. One of them is Leon Bearden, part-time automobile salesman, age 38, of Chandler, Arizona. The other is his son, Cody, age 16. Leon Bearden has an arrest record for grand theft, forgery, and robbery dating back to 1941 and is now on parole. The FBI says he was recently identified as having contacted the Cuban embassy in Mexico City in January. The 707 was on the runway at El Paso for 9 hours with 10 hostages aboard before the Beardens were overpowered. President Kennedy himself ordered that they were not to be allowed to take the aircraft out of the country or to escape, and that order was carried out.
This is an NBC special news report. The Great Plane Robbery, a special report on the hijacking of the 707 in El Paso, Texas today. Here is NBC News correspondent Edwin Newman.
The story of the hijacked airplane is now over, although we will certainly be concerned with its consequences for some time to come. It began a few hours before dawn this morning. Here is NBC News reporter Roy Neal from KTSM-TV in El Paso, Texas.
This unbelievable but absolutely true story began when the big Continental 707 jet took off from Phoenix for El Paso during part of its scheduled run from Los Angeles to Houston. Two men, Leon Pearson and his 16-year-old son, Cody, pulled guns in flight, forced the crew to act under their orders. They demanded that the plane go on to Havana, Cuba. Now, the pilot, noting that there was a need for fuel, landed at El Paso. On landing, the gunman permitted 61 of the passengers to get off, holding four as a hostage, plus the crew of six. The ground crew stalled 4 hours for refueling, and finally, the elder Dearden demanded quick action. Take off immediately, he said, and so the crew tried to comply. This was the scene as that happened. The guards, meanwhile, observing the attempted takeoff, moved into position near the end of the runway, and there they did what came naturally. They opened fire. Not at the people, but at the tires and the landing gear. All 10 of the tires were flattened. The landing gear was jammed, and the hydraulic system had bullet holes in it as well. All of which was probably just as well for those aboard, because Havana's Jose Marti Airport has a runway too short for safe landings for so large and fast an aircraft. Several hours later, two of the stewardesses and two of the hostages were permitted to escape through the rear of the plane. The action here took place when FBI agents and border patrolmen managed to gain the attention of the hijackers in the front end of the plane. This is Jack Casey, a Continental Airlines employee who went aboard to help the stewardesses and the hostages escape and was picked up in error by guards who thought that he was one of the hijackers themselves, a situation that was soon corrected and he was released. The crowds were kept back, far back, all during the entire episode as the gunmen held their position. FBI agent Frank Casey went aboard. Frank Crosby, correction. He jumped the older man, working under orders, disarmed both. A 38 and a 45 revolver, one apiece, were their weaponry. They were then taken off the plane. Officials identified them once they had moved back into the city of El Paso. They were under complete and protective guard all the way from the time they came out of the airplane. FBI agents then went aboard to make an inspection. Finally, however, the drama was ended. Both hostages and lawmen were somewhat relieved by this time. The crowd of gun-toting law officers, some 200 in all, plus the crew who came off the plane last, finally were able to depart the El Paso International Airport and start thinking about other things. Meanwhile, as far as the damage of the plane is concerned, these are the tires that were flattened. And here are the bullet holes in the fuselage. The agents noted that they had to use fists and bullets to prevent the father and son pirate team from hijacking the $5 million plane. Late this afternoon, the pair were arraigned in downtown El Paso. There is still no explanation of why they tried to force the plane to go.
The hijacking of airplanes is a spectacular business, but in essence, it is not new. Public transport has always been the target of the lawless on stagecoaches, railway trains, and buses, and attacks on it have always aroused great public anger. What is different about aircraft is that the element of danger to those aboard is so much greater. There's no margin for error. One slip-up, something unexpected, can mean disaster. Moreover, crimes that involve airplanes have for a long time attracted the desperate and the mentally unbalanced. And for that reason, the safeguarding of commercial aircraft has never been easy. And it's now being made even more difficult by our political troubles with Cuba. The essential problem here, however, has nothing to do with the motive of the crime, with whether Cuba or Fidel Castro did or did not cause the incident. Late last month, a plane was hijacked and flown to Cuba for purely political reasons. Last week, a pilot and another airline employee were shot in a California hijacking attempt that had nothing to do with politics. The problem is ensuring the safe passage by public conveyance of passenger, crew member, and mail. Naturally, that's of special concern to those who are employed flying airplanes. Here is reporter Floyd Kalber at NBC News in Chicago.
Very concerned about airline passengers, crews, and planes, the Airline Pilots Association, with headquarters in Chicago, called on Congress today to support and pass the pending legislation that would make such acts of violence in the skies as hijacking a federal offense, with an increase in penalties for this crime. Following the FAA's authorization for pilots to carry guns, I talked with the Pilots Association President Clarence Sayen about this and other matters.
The association does not favor, and we've reviewed this subject many times and studied it in the past, does not favor the arming of air crews. We feel that such an action could cause more difficulty than it would do good. The arming of crews and the crews act in attempting to protect themselves against hijackers could result in the death or injury of the crew and leave a load of passengers without any effective assistance.
Does the association have any proposals that haven't yet been made by other officials in the country?
We've studied for a long time some method of examining the material which an individual can bring on board an aircraft. This situation isn't too much different than we've had with the bombing problem. It's a question of determining whether an individual boarding an airliner has with him a bomb, a gun, or something else to which he could cause damage or try to do away with the aircraft. Some methods have been studied by which, without undue delay to the passenger boarding the airplane, you might be able to examine the individual's luggage. We think that most certainly research to develop this sort of a device should continue. Should be expedited.
Is there any merit to guards on airplanes, riding the airplanes?
Well, there'd probably be merit to it, but it sounds like a very difficult situation. You know how many airplanes we operate in this country. I think this falls somewhat in the same category as arming the flight crew. One of the difficulties the flight crews are having today is to determine who might be a guard, who might be a peaceful person, who might not be, because people are permitted to carry firearms on board aircraft. And something most certainly should be done on this question.
Is something proposed in the way of legislation on that?
There was a discussion in Washington yesterday with the Federal Aviation Agency and all interested parties on this subject. Exactly what was developed, I don't know yet.
Pilots President Sayen also came out against any swapping of planes with Cuba, and he called for diplomatic work to put international law back into effect once again. Floyd Kalber, NBC News, Chicago.
Since a National Airlines plane was commandeered by Cubans on the 1st of May, there has been some attempt to take precautions, especially at airports, but they're not always effective. and it's not always obvious what should or can be done. This dilemma is borne out, I think, in reports from some of our correspondents around the country about what is happening at airports in their cities. Here are the reports, beginning with NBC News reporter Don Roberts in Los Angeles.
The new Jet Age Los Angeles International Airport boasts the very latest in airport design. The $70 million facility that launched the hijacked plane last night handles four planes a minute when all runways are in operation. One of the 20 airlines serving Los Angeles is Continental. For several hours today, an agent of the FBI studied the manifest of flight number 54, seeking clues to the identities of the plane's hijackers. And airport officials, including General Manager Francis Fox, wondered how to keep this sort of nuisance from happening again. Fox wondered if the military could place a couple of uniformed men aboard all commercial craft headed in the general direction of Cuba, if crews should be armed, if the FBI should observe all passengers before they board. Some might consider these proposals extreme, but Fox and others point out that the state of the world being what it is today, something has to be done to protect the air traveler from the high-flying, hijacking fanatics such as were at work today over Texas. This is Don Roberts, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Despite the fact that today's hijackers were apparently not Cubans and had no affiliation with communist Cuba, Miami's International Airport has been plagued with hijackers both pro and anti-Castro. In fact, it's a routine thing now when a Cuban aircraft lands, commandeered by an anti-Castroite fleeing communist Cuba. Now a new problem presents itself, and that's communist sympathizers trying to get back to their leader, Fidel. First, it was a National Airlines plane, then most recently an Eastern Electra. The hijackings over the state have caused little alarm in law enforcement ranks here in Miami, but the Border Patrol, the FBI, and the Sheriff's Department say they're on the alert. The airport is policed by Metro Sheriff's Department and the U.S. Border Patrol. Nine sheriff's deputies, headed by a chief and a sergeant, look for possible hijackers. But it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. Miami's airport is one of the busiest in the world. Metro officers arrested one man today that did have a gun and was ready to board a Pan American flight. It turned out he was no hijacker, and after a check with the FBI, was allowed to continue to his destination if the pilot kept the gun. This is Max Moore, WCKT News, Miami.
Chicago's O'Hare International Airport is the western terminus for Continental Airlines. At the Continental ticket office, there was normal activity this evening. No indication that today's attempted hijacking would stop travelers from making scheduled trips. Awaiting the boarding of the passengers was one of Continental's five 707 Boeing jets, a duplicate of the plane involved in today's incident. Of the many airlines in Chicago, only a few of them told us today that they were now or are planning to take precautionary measures to protect their planes and passengers from hijacking. Eastern Airlines, after losing their plane to Cuba last week, admitted they are taking extra measures, but would not say what they are. Continental officials said their headquarters in Denver is working on an overall plan for the future. Whatever measures may be taken by the lines, there was no evidence of undue concern this evening at Chicago's International Airport, and no report from local authorities that protection has been requested. NBC News, Chicago.
There were many people who had to make hard decisions as the story of the stolen airplane unfolded. One of them was Robert Six, the president of Continental Airlines, which owns the plane. At first, it was reported that the hijackers wanted to trade the 707 jet for a smaller piston-engine DC-7, which is still quite a large plane. That request was reported to Mr. Six at his head office in Denver. What happened then is part of today's story. Here again is Roy Neal at station KTSM-TV in El Paso.
First part of the plan was to prevent the airplane from getting to Cuba. We thought security of the passengers and the crew was safer on the ground at El Paso, Texas, than releasing the airplane. Mm-hmm. We felt, since time was working in our favor, that our first plan was, if we could not stall, was to shoot the tires off the airplane with the Border Patrol and the FBI. That was plan number one. Plan number two was an offer to trade a DC-7B for the Boeing to fly them down there. We would give them the airplane. At that time, we thought he was an agent for the Castro government. Mm-hmm. This again gave us time to stall and protect our passengers on it. We alerted the fighter command in the event the ship had to take off. We asked them to have tracers and heavy rounds of 50 caliber, and we were prepared to blow the nose of the airplane off to scare him enough to make him come back and land again. Mm-hmm. The fourth plan was discarded, so it's not worthwhile at this point. The FBI was in accord with our plan, and I proceeded then by airplane with members of my staff to El Paso, Texas.
Now, here in El Paso, Mr. Six, how much in control of the situation was Continental Airlines, your group, as compared to the various federal and local agencies of law enforcement that were here?
The local Continental group did an excellent job, and I'm very proud of them. They notified the government agencies right away, kept communications lines open with our people in Denver, and had a going organization prior to the time that I arrived here, and kept in touch with me by radio phone while I was flying down here.
Did they stay in control of the situation?
They stayed in complete control of the situation by stalling fueling, mm-hmm. pretending to fuel, and doing everything. The rate of fueling, it took them 3 hours actually to fuel the airplane.
What is the obligation of a common carrier, such as your organization is, relative to its passengers in such a situation?
Our responsibility is to protect the lives of our passengers and our crew, even if we lost the airplane.
Mm-hmm. Now, relative to the DC-7 vis-a-vis the Boeing 707, would you have gone through with that transaction?
We would have gone through with it, and as a matter of fact, Captain Snyder and a first and second officer flew down with me and volunteered to fly this airplane to Cuba to release the present crew who was not qualified to fly a DC-7. They were a jet crew but had never flown a DC-7.
Which brings us, I think, to the future. How do the airlines, particularly yours, since you are its president, feel about legislation to prevent such happenings in the future?
We feel very strongly about it. There's been great talk yesterday and today in the Senate and the House. We believe tomorrow and Monday additional legislation will be passed covering hijackers of this type. In addition to this, we have additional security measures that we can activate tomorrow throughout the industry that will add a great safety factor over and above of what we've had before.
Do you plan to activate those measures?
Yes, we do.
And what kind of legislation do you hope will...
Well, the legislation I cannot discuss this time. I'm not familiar with what the Senate brought up today, having been involved in this all day here in El Paso.
Right. It's been a long night, and I know you've got to get back to your Denver headquarters. Thank you very much, Robert Six.
Thank you very much.
President of Continental
Appreciate
Airlines.
Right.
Tomorrow, Congress considers laws to prevent the hijacking of planes and to enforce public order in an area that hardly seemed needed only a few weeks ago. That report is coming up. But here again is Whitfield Connor with a message from Gulf. The temper of Congress today was angry, as we said. One bill dealing with the problem comes from Senator Claire Engel of California. Here he is with reporter Sandra Van Oker.
Senator Engel, what's the mood of Congress about these airplane hijackings?
The Congress is outraged at the hijacking of these airplanes. This is the third event of this type. Congress is prepared to take action, and I believe within the next few days we'll start the kind of action we need to take on the part of the federal government to terminate this sort of outrage against American sovereignty and American dignity.
Now, you suggest, by outrages against American sovereignty, that there might have been a foreign element there. Has it been proven that these people are involved with the Cubans in any way?
We haven't established that definitely, of course. But the very fact that these people want to go to Havana creates in our mind an implication that somewhere or other the Castro regime is involved in it. In other words, a pattern is appearing. We had one in Miami, now we have one in El Paso. And if we just have one more, I think we have enough to show that there is some kind of pattern.
All right, Senator, now your bill goes up for hearings. What are its measures? Will they be punitive enough to deter people from doing this?
Well, without going into all the provisions, because it relates to domestic flights as well as to some others, this bill would provide that anyone guilty of hijacking an airplane would be guilty of a federal offense and subject to life imprisonment. Now, this measure would thereby bring into operation all of the law enforcement agencies of the federal government, including the FBI, right from the beginning, and extend the long arm of Uncle Sam, which reaches beyond local jurisdictions, the state jurisdictions, in order to help in the prevention of this kind of a situation.
One quick question. Do you think arming the crews is going to help?
I'm not so sure about that. That's another thing that will have to be considered. But at the present time, we want to put federal law into operation in this field, and it should be.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Senator
you very
Claire
much.
Engel. This is Sandra Van Oker, NBC News, Washington.
President Kennedy said last week that he had not expected quite the relentless succession of problems that he's had to face since he took office. It's unlikely that he ever dreamed he would have to issue orders that the government of the United States, in all its might and majesty, must make no deals with a man and a boy armed with revolvers. It was a decision that carried risks, but that it was a decision the vast majority of Americans would support cannot be doubted. Today's firmness may help to prevent the recurrence of such incidents, but as I said earlier, crimes involving aircraft attract the desperate and the mentally unbalanced, and the protection of American commercial aircraft is made infinitely more difficult by our troubles with Cuba. Moreover, some of the remedies put forward today sound as bad as what they're designed to cure. Arming airplane crews, for example, could lead to gunfights in the air. It doesn't require much imagination to see what the result of such shooting could be. That's not said in criticism of those who are trying to figure out what to do. It only demonstrates how difficult the problem is. Now, programs like this, like all other programs, must come to an end. They are expected to end with a sage recommendation or a judicious appreciation of what is likely to happen next. Tonight, we have found such an ending impossible to bring forth. The hijacking of the 707 is over, more or less happily, but what happened today is not likely to be the end of the story. Edwin Newman, NBC News. Good evening.
Portions of this program have been pre-recorded, television tape edited by Andrew Switzer, Vincent Petta, and Charles Weller. Next week in this time, this special NBC News report has been brought to you by the Gulf Oil Corporation.